Love Boat.
Cappy's here.
Cappy!
And so is CY, Clinton Yates Dave, in for Sedano. And, hey,
oh, by the way, I gave, we'll see if Jason Segel picks up. I gave Bergman Jason Segel's cell.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Clinton has come in with visual aids.
Okay, so.
And he has a question about something on his phone.
Cap, I'm going to retweet this right now from my account because Funches sent it to me, and he pointed to a picture. Now, I'm going to describe this loosely. Underneath the photograph, it says, jam session. In sort of like 80s bubble graffiti letters.
How many guys roughly are in that picture?
It's about 30 brothers.
Yeah.
About two white boys.
Mm-hmm. Who are the white guys?
It's definitely a picture from the 70s, presumably.
From the 80s, early 80s.
80s, okay, early 80s, excuse me. A fair amount of guys are handling instruments.
Yeah.
Jam session, mm-hmm. presumably.
Right.
And in the middle.
Michael can't play no instrument.
In the middle, wearing a lovely herringbone chain. With a great mustache and a mini fro.
Really?
Is one Michael Thompson.
That's right.
Wow. Look right here, Mace. Look right
there. So, Michael, what do you remember about
But let me scroll. Yeah. Let me scroll left to right, and I'll just name the people I can name. I can see
You should be able to recognize them all.
I can see George Gervin. Yep. I can see Michael. Is this Bill Cartwright?
Yep.
Is that Robert Parrish?
Robert Parrish.
Wow.
Is that a young... That can't be David Robinson. That wouldn't make sense.
No.
And I can't really...
George Gervin should be in that.
Gervin's there. That's the first
Artist
person.
Artist Gilmore in there.
Okay, there's a lot of people. So, basically, they're standing under a basketball hoop that is well-worn. They all have basketballs, long socks, and instruments. It's called Jam Session.
Jam Session.
What is this?
We had a special Nike club in the early 80s. It was about 40 of us in the Nike club, and Nike used to take us on trips to Seville, to Hawaii, Seville, Spain. We'd go over there, and we went to Madrid. We went to a World Cup soccer match over there. Nike would take like 40, 50 of us, first class, all expenses, the greatest trip you could possibly go on. And they gave us each about, we were making about $50,000 a year back then in the early 80s to wear Nike products. And $50,000 back then was considered
big deal money.
That was big money back in
the 80s. How'd you screw that up?
Well... Nike came up with a stupid business concept that I still don't understand why they did it. So
what's
there's
that,
about
Jordan?
There's about 30 or 40 of us in that picture. And Nike got rid of every one of us except for George Gervin. I think Moses Malone is in there too.
Yes.
And maybe one other guy. Got basically rid of 97% of us cap. Decided to say, you know what, let's throw all of our money into a different direction. Instead of paying all these guys all this money, let's let their contracts expire and let's put all of our interests and all of our money and promotion into some young punk named Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Never heard of him.
How did that work out for him?
Well, right. Cap, you will have Winning Time. There's a scene in Winning Time, Michael, I know you haven't watched it yet, where a young Phil Knight comes to Magic Johnson and basically offers him the Jordan deal first.
Right.
An angsty... anxious, hasty Phil Knight.
Right. And Magic.
Stock. You also have stock in the company.
Yeah. Magic listened to him.
Yep.
And then took the Converse deal.
Took the cash.
Wow.
And there's a funny moment in Winning Time where Magic, Quincy Isaiah, the actor, turns to the camera, breaks the fourth wall, and said, "I don't regret it." And then they cut to Phil Knight, and he says, "He regrets it."
I think if you'd have kept that Nike stock, I think it'd be worth $2 billion.
$5.6 billion.
There's a pretty famous quote that he says every time he drives by like a Nike store, he sheds a bit of a tear or whatever.
Was that Magic said that?
Yeah, Magic was like, "Bro, it hurts every time." I can imagine.
Yeah. It was another player too. I believe it was Spencer Haywood who also offered Nike stock to begin with, and Nike was getting off the ground. He turned that down. Well, Spencer actually said he didn't turn it down. He says his agent turned it down to get the cash instead from Converse or something like that.
Wow.
And Spencer said he didn't know that. He didn't know about the stock options that Nike offered him.
John, have you seen this picture? Scott, have you seen this picture?
I've seen it. Yep.
It's fantastic, right?
It's cool.
I mean, what a throwback. Yeah. Where do I get a post, Michael? I want one. I put it up on my wall.
You should be able to get those anywhere. Just on the internet, I would imagine. But yeah, I got some of those posters at home. But yeah, Nike treated us so well. We were so heartbroken when they decided to not renew our contracts and decided to put all their eggs in the Jordan basket. Dumb decision.
There's one guy in the middle of this picture that I would have sworn is Dave Winfield, but are these all basketball players?
All basketball players, yeah. Let me see if I give me the picture. Let me see if I can name him for you.
There you go.
Let's see.
Dave Winfield was, didn't he play basketball at the University of Minnesota, Michael?
He got drafted by all four sports leagues.
All right, starting from left to right.
Here we go.
Dan Rounfield, George Gervin, Phil Smith from the Golden State Warriors, Daryl Griffith, Reggie Theus, Campy Russell, Alvin Adams, Elvin Hayes, Maurice Lucas, Dennis Johnson, me, Artist Gilmore, Norm Nixon, Moses Malone, Bill Cartwright, Truck Robinson, John Drew, Robert Parrish, Rudy Tomjanovich, Bernard King,
Rudy T.
Lionel Hollins, Paul Westfall, and Austin Carr.
Funches, great pull.
Wow. Three, wow. That's unbelievable. I counted three white guys.
Hey, guys, I found it on eBay, too, the poster.
Okay, yeah. How much?
Go ahead and purchase that. I'll Venmo you,
guys,
you
try
later,
to guess.
Sir.
I'll say the original poster, I'll say you can buy it for $50.
I'll take the under on that.
Yep. What is it? What's the cost of Funches?
$12.
$12?
$380.
Oh, yeah. $380.
So maybe I'll have to purchase that myself.
Yeah, I'll be betting on myself.
Okay.
You mentioned the white guys. I counted three white guys on the list.
Rudy T.
Alvin Adams, and there
Paul
was
Westfall.
Paul Westfall.
Oh, right. Westfall. Yeah. Okay. I mean, what a picture.
That
I'm sorry. This is fantastic. Yeah. Like, this is the kind of stuff that I love.
Yeah, that's cool. Michael, can I speak to you for a moment,
sure,
if you don't mind?
Of course, Cap. You have permission.
Am I even necessary here?
Yes.
You are.
Well,
you
I got to leave early, so you are.
Mace, so I have some things I'd like to talk to you about as well.
Yeah, I asked you who you recognize to start things off.
I'm so not necessary to the
you
proceedings.
You are necessary.
Yeah.
You are.
It's all about him.
All right, Cap, go. What do you have for Michael?
He came
Cap.
Out
Michael,
at a funeral.
Michael, you're pretty active on...
Came out at a funeral, yeah.
You're pretty active on Twitter, I think.
Yeah.
Would you call yourself active?
Yeah, I like to talk about good stuff.
Yeah. So Friday night, I went with a pal of mine, and we were at a baseball game, and I was sitting in right center field, right on the front row, and there was a guy by the name of Thompson playing right field.
Yeah.
Oh, this Cap, you've brought up a sore subject.
Oh, it's okay. No. Go ahead.
Uh-oh. And they put up on the screen, hey, his dad was the number one overall pick, blah, blah, blah. And I tweet pictures of you like, yo, I'm here supporting your man. I mean, did you not see that?
No, I didn't see it. Otherwise, I definitely would have responded. I didn't see it.
Cap, well, I brought that up, too, because I did see it, and he got DFA'd
today.
DFA'd.
Yeah, he got DFA'd.
He'll be back.
Dagger.
He'll be back. He'll be back.
So he's in Oklahoma now?
He's El Paso.
El Paso. The, Oklahoma City, by the way, best minor league ballpark in America.
Is it?
Yeah.
And Mickey Mantle's Steakhouse right across the street from the ballpark.
Great place.
Excellent. Michael,
great place.
That really sucks because it turns out that last night, the Padres had a rookie outfielder who at the wall had a ball hit him in the glove and go over the wall.
There you go.
Jose Canseco.
The Canseco play.
Yeah. See, Trace would have caught that.
Right. Of course he would.
Yeah. Anyway, so he'll be back. He's got to go earn his way back.
Guy's been grinding for a while, man. I got nothing but appreciation for the determination.
Heck,
you know?
Yeah. Like I said, when you get, retire and do what? Go work for UPS? Nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with it, but hey.
It's
you know?
Amazon these days, okay?
Oh, Amazon,
let's,
right.
Let's be real.
You know, keep swinging the bat until you can't swing it no more. Right, Mace? You got to include
exactly.
Mace.
Make them rip that jersey off your back. Michael, right. Do you ever regret retiring
early? Yeah, I retired at 36 Cap and Clinton. I could have played two more years. Pat Riley actually asked me to come to New York to back up Patrick Ewing.
I've heard this story. You've told it.
But at 36, Mace, I said, you know what? Pat Riley's his practices.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could really
couldn't
talk.
Get through them?
I just didn't want to. Yeah. But you know what? I still regret it today. I think I should have tried it.
Let me ask you this, Mace.
Oh, and me?
This,
I'm involved
this is something.
Okay,
this
good.
Is something that I brought up before. Okay. The Pat Riley character on Winning Time is easily the most compelling.
He's great.
And he's got the most to grow. I love Adrian Brody as Pat Riley. You're a movie, cinema, acting guy. Yeah. How do you feel about that performance?
I think he's great. I mean, the cast top to bottom is great. The guy that blows me away is John C. Reilly.
He's good. Oh, yeah.
John C. Reilly is fantastic. He should win awards for that. I think Adrian Brody should be up for awards for that. I think Jason Segel is great. I mean, honestly, that cast from top to bottom, the guys they found, Solomon Hughes and Delonte D'Souza, and who's the guy that plays Magic?
Quincy Isaiah.
Quincy Isaiah. Those guys, I mean, the casting people should win awards for that. They had to search the country to find guys to play those players.
My favorite moment is when he, I don't want to say attacks Westhead in the shower, but they sort of go after each other, and he tells them to sort of get it together, and you get that first like villain look of the hair slick back.
Oh yeah,
where he's all wet, and he's just like, oh, he kind of walks off like, I can't believe I had to do this, and you see that little flash forward. Oh, it's a great moment.
Most underrated character on Winning Time,
easily.
Zaslow.
It's not Zaslow. It's
Zastro.
Zastro.
Yeah, mythical, by the way.
A composite of many bad people.
Zaslow Michaels, the guy who walks up to Magic
bad
and goes,
people.
Well, he Let's seduced go party. Him into that world of, you know.
The party world?
Real life.
That world.
America.
The party world.
in that
All right, I got to go pick up my son at school, so I'm leaving early. Mace, question. Are you seriously going to dress up for the Lombardi party thing tomorrow night?
I will be wearing a suit.
I don't.
Oh, I'm getting dressed up too. Yeah, I'm getting dolled up for this thing too. Yeah.
No, a real suit.
A real suit.
I own a real suit, and I am going to wear it.
Wow. Does it fit
tomorrow? Yes. I don't know.
So that means there's money.
We're about to find out.
Do you know how to tie a tie?
I'm not wearing a tie. I threw away all my ties. I gave all my ties to Goodwill.
That was a dodge to the question, though.
Which was?
Do you know how to tie a tie?
Oh, of course I do.
Okay.
When was the last time you tied one?
That's a better question.
83.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, you forgot.
I'm telling you right now, the bigger question is, does the suit fit? Because you probably haven't put it on in easily 2 years.
Excellent Cappy. Point, Cap.
You know what I'm doing, though, now? I've got this this app that Bergman showed me called the Lose It app.
Yeah.
Where you keep track of your calories every day. That's what it's come to. And last night, we had I had a great moment. This is just a great personal moment, a personal high. So last night, I don't know if you heard this or not, but last night, Juan broke down and ordered donuts from DK's to be delivered.
Once again.
And he ordered six because we normally have three each. So.
I know. I'm with you. This is beyond hilarious.
I said to Juan, you know what? I'm not doing it tonight. I am not going to eat those donuts. You can leave them on the dresser. I'm not going to eat them. Went
abstained?
To sleep without them. And when I woke up in the morning, all gone.
Wow.
Juan.
Really?
Juan is the one. Yeah, I ate six donuts.
So I have an app too. It's called The Mirror.
And what's The Mirror?
I look at it. The Mirror, yeah. In that way.
Yeah, The Mirror. You got no issues with that. It's The Mirror app.
You're like super. Vegan,
you
gluten free. What are you?
You said something to me the other day offhandedly in this setup that stuck with me. Like, I don't know what. I was telling the woman I love about it the other day.
Yeah.
You said, you look like an eat to live kind of guy. You said that at the remote.
You do.
And I'm kind of that. Like, I like good food that tastes like what I want, but I'm not a big eat. I don't eat tons of food. I eat what I like.
Well, I've told this story before, but in my family, the more I ate, the more I got praised.
Right.
So my grandmother would say, Stevie had fifths. And I was supposed to be proud. So I got rewarded for eating more, and now to this day, I eat too much.
Wow, this has been worked out in many therapy sessions.
A lot of therapy.
Wow.
A lot of therapy.
Wow. I was rewarded for overeating.
They're normal size, full size donuts. Yeah, six.
Wow.
Six donuts. But it was all night.
Sure.
Yeah, so I mean, there was.
What do you drink with your donuts? Do you drink ice cold milk or it's got to be coffee or what?
No, ice cold milk. You got to have milk.
Yeah.
Whole milk?
Are you a skim guy or whole guy? I'm a whole guy.
I'm a skim guy.
I'm a 2%er.
Okay.
Yeah. You're a 2%er?
2%.
Give me.
You're a 1%er.
All of the fight.
No, that's true. A 1%er drinking a 2%er. We all want to be 1%ers.
I've transitioned into almond milk, I admit it.
Really?
Oh, almond milk. I like almond milk.
Hold on, Tim Cap. Are you drinking almond milk straight?
No. Well,
okay. Or
Clinton,
that's your sweetener deal.
Well, no. I will tell you this. You ready? Last night, because I'm on a diet, so I'm using almond milk now, you know.
All right.
I had like 12 double stuffed Oreos that I dunked in the almond milk.
So good.
And then when I got, now they don't take on the moisture the same.
Sure.
With the wafer,
so don't get good and soaky.
It's not as there's a word here that starts with M. I'll find it later, but it's like they're not as moyent or whatever. Like there's a word
moyent.
There. They don't take on as much.
Moist.
But then after
moist.
About 12,
let's not use that word. Come on, guys. Come on.
Everybody hates that word.
Why?
Why? What's wrong
Everybody
with it?
Does. Everybody does.
Michael,
hates
I don't have a problem with it. You and me.
I've got a
you
huge problem with it. Do not use it.
Really? What do you think of when you hear the word moist?
I might actually be thinking of a word in a different language.
Changing.
Okay.
Changing subjects.
Is Mouillon the word?
All right, speaking of other things, Mace.
Yes!
So I want to bring it all together. We were talking a little winning time.
Right.
Earlier you were talking about your desire to be on stage and perform. Right?
Yes.
Our common friend Spencer Garrett, who played Chick Hearn.
Yeah.
He is in New York right now working on a new
play
that Jason Alexander is directing.
Right.
So why is it that you have the Culture Pop podcast?
Right.
On the big screen now itself, where all of Hollywood is seeing your ads.
Correct.
Why are you not leveraging this to get back onto the stage? You got it, baby.
Yeah, I got
it. You got
back,
it.
Got to get back on the boards.
Is that a move? You can do that?
I can
jump off that diving board?
Well, I mean, in a different life, I went to Yale Drama School, and
I heard
became
that
an actor.
Just now. Yeah.
No, not in a different life. You didn't go to Yale Drama School.
Turns out it was the same
no, in an alternate universe.
The multiverse.
In the multiverse, right. I went to Yale, and I became an actor. Now, I was accepted there, and then my mom and dad said, no, you're on your own, kid.
So what do we do as our play? Like, I know you talked about Levitard. They write their own plays, but like, as somebody that is a fan of stage and script, what play would best befit the ESPN 710 family as a way to represent all of the cacophony and circus nonsense we do.
Les Miserables.
Les Mis.
Yes.
Ah bon?
That would be good.
Very well.
It would be good.
Okay.
One more day, another destiny, this endless road to Calvary. These men don't seem to know my cross.
Are you a musical guy, Clinton?
I am absolutely a musical guy,
really?
But not in the way that you think. Musicals are special to me because I happen to go to a school where I grew up. They're, like, our music teacher, who recently passed as an aside, was just very passionate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it was one of those things where just like every coach I ever had, I wasn't a theater guy because I was too scared. I couldn't memorize lines and I was too scared to talk. I could cuss at the opposing coach and tell him what his wife's shampoo smelled like.
Yep.
But I could not actually stand on stage and recite lines in front of my friends. So I really admired my friends who did it. And so we did a lot of different plays. And now as a result, I have a great appreciation for theater. My favorite play of all time, Guys and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls, old school.
Clásico. I've got the soundtrack on wax, and I love the movie too.
Yeah, the movie's great.
The movie's fantastic.
Movie's great. Yeah.
Michael, you don't have a musical you like?
No, I grew up on Gene Kelly and Grace Kelly. What was Gene Kelly and who's the girl, the woman?
Chaplin. You grew up on Chaplin.
Gene Kelly and who's the girl to dance with? Oh, Fred Astaire and what was the girl? Ginger Rogers.
Right.
I grew up watching that stuff, but I outgrew it.
So the first movie ever made, I think, was The Great Train Robbery.
Yeah,
I think it was. Michael, what was it like to see that in the theater for the first time?
The first one I ever saw was Charlie Chaplin.
That's right. There you go.
That's right.
Mace, it's nice circumstances somebody were a little different getting into the theater those days.
That's
fellas.
Right.
Yeah. Mace, it's nice to have somebody older in the studio
that's
that
right,
you
Mace.
Can kind of look at and kind of pick at. Right?
I got more life experience than you guys.
Right. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean,
what do they call it? Level. I'm at level 4.
We got some breaking news.
Oh,
some
here
breaking
we go.
News.
Oh, what is it?
All right, Mason, this is actually for you. So Mason, without telling anybody, decided to mess around with me during crosstalk, and he was sending me random phone numbers to call Jason Segel.
Oh, this is great.
Well,
Mason is dying over here,
he loves it so
he
much.
He cannot stop laughing.
So there's a text chain where I'm just sending him different phone numbers for Jason Segel.
So because you've decided to mess around with me, and Lindsay, who is very good at getting people, I asked Lindsay if she has his number, and she does.
No way!
Yes.
Wow.
So we are going to have Jason Segel at 2:30 on Friday.
Nice!
Why don't you just put him on right now?
I was going to say,
he wasn't available. He wasn't available now.
We're having him on the dial.
He wasn't available now, but
a penalty
and then tomorrow, we're going to be at Hollywood Park Casino.
Did
so
none of the
on
numbers
Friday.
I sent you work?
No, one of them was your number, first of all.
Shout out to Lindsay, though. She's
nice job,
it?
Lindsay.
Good get.
Lindsay.
Good get.
God. Good girl.
Let's make a trade.
We had a lot of random guests on during COVID, you know.
Oh, that's right.
You want to do this again?
You want to trade? You guys want to do a trade again? You guys want to do like 6 month windows?
No, not doing again.
You know?
You have to throw in a few extra draft picks to get Lindsay.
Wait, you don't miss me?
I miss you personally.
But that's it.
You're saying Ireland doesn't?
Nice.
No, Ireland does, yeah. Whenever I think of Lindsay, I think of
Tinder?
Yeah, Tinder, Radio Tinder. It's my favorite part of the Sedano and Cap show.
Well, you know, listen, I miss Bergman.
I
miss Bergman.
Take it away, Sedano.
And
Sedano.
I love that bit.
All right, I believe that's...
I miss Cap.
My favorite part of Bergman is now Dottie.
Right.
I think that's most people's favorite part about him.
Yeah. Dottie is money.
Dottie's a hottie?
Do you want to have Adrian Brody on Friday?
Sure, you want to give me a number?
I'll text you the number.
Just make sure it's not yours.
Hello, Domino's.
All right. That is it for Mason in Ireland. Coming up next for you, Sedano and Cap Michael Thompson. Thanks for hanging out today. We love you. And Jorge and Bergman and Lindsay jumping in. And everybody, thanks very much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow live from Hollywood Park for our private Lombardi party. Hope to see all you winners there. I get to host that thing tomorrow. It should be great. Coming up next for you, Sedano Cap, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. Bum, ba-dum-bum. Bum, ba-dum-bum. Yes, Clinton Yates. Yes, go, you go.
All right, that's enough.
Wow, I love your drum solo in between.
Listen, man, percussion is an important and integral part of all symphonic compositions. Gotta be able to bang the drum. if you know what I'm talking about.
Well said.
Thank
Man,
you.
I'm telling you, you and I are very aligned. I'm so happy to have Clinton Yates in today.
Oh, Scott, I have so many things for you. I'm so excited for this.
Oh, good. Because like the other day when you sent me a text about Crazy Eye Killa on, on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Who is it?
I was like,
it's
yes.
Killa.
Yeah, me and Clinton, we are aligned on this stuff.
Larry, I hear you popping them MF and bubbles. You know, that's one of the – okay, so I'll tell you quickly. I didn't really watch that show, but my friends in college did. I thought it was a little too goofy, as much as I might have liked Seinfeld. But that one episode, there's like a three-episode arc with Crazy Eyes Killa, and there's one where he goes to his house and he's looking for Larry.
Oh, yeah.
And Larry has just unpacked a bunch of boxes, and so he's got the bubble wrap upstairs, and he's hiding from Crazy Eyes Killa. And the other dude answers the door. He's like, he rings the doorbell, who is it? It's Killa. And we had a friend in our group name whose last name was Kilgore, and we called him Killa. So whenever he would answer, whenever he would come to the door, he would say, it's Killa. It was very funny. Anyway.
I love the scene where Larry shows up at Killa's house, and he says, hey, you want to take the tour? And Larry doesn't really want to take the tour, but earlier he'd gotten banned from Jeff's house for not taking the tour.
Right.
For, you know, so he's like, man, these are some stairs right here. This is the dining room. This is where, like, we dine and stuff, you know?
Where I mean, we dine like- and stuff. Exactly. No, it's fantastic. But so the reason I have so many things to tell you, and, like, look, let's be serious here. I had the weekend of my life. Like, not really necessarily. I mean, better things have happened in my life, but not many better things have happened with this conglomeration of events, hospitality, timing, and everything. Scott, I know you're a horseman. Right now, I am wearing a hat I purchased at Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky, the day of the race.
You went to the Kentucky Derby this weekend, and this was your first time at the Derby?
Not only did I go, but because, hello, I am A, president of the local chapter of the Handsome Man Community, and B, television's Clinton Yates, I was invited by the mayor of Louisville, shout out to Bill Plaschke, who introduced me to him, I was invited by the mayor of Louisville to attend as one of his personal guests this weekend. It was off the chain, Scott.
Is this because he's a fan of your work on Around the Horn or something?
There's an element of that, but I did a panel in Louisville on Jackie Robinson Day a couple weeks back, and I said offhand when he asked me if I was going to the Derby, I said, I've never been. I'm not some huge horse racing guy, but I love a party. I love the pageantry. It's one of those things where if somebody asked me to go, I'd probably drop everything and make it happen. Offhand comment, no big deal. Wednesday before the race, he calls me, 6 a.m. Pacific time, Yates, are you ready to drop everything? I got a couple tickets for you. Come be my guest. Just get
no
to Louisville.
Way.
It was unbelievable, Scott. So I get on a plane. I happen to be in Philly on Thursday because my sister graduated from college, Temple. Shouts to her. So that was fun. I was on the East Coast anyway, bro. And I just popped on down to Louisville. And let me tell you something. If you've never been to Louisville on Derby Day, I can take you through this all day. But the funniest thing, Scott, and this is the part that I know you'll care about, is that when you pull in to the airport, it's not renamed Ali yet, bro, the private jets.
Oh, yeah.
Just
they're
lining,
just littered. Yep.
Lining the tarmac. They are everywhere. I took all sorts of pictures. It was police escorts, VIP, security. Awesome time. I was still exhausted. I got to meet so many of the people of Louisville. Just so much happened, and it was such an experience, you know, from an outing standpoint, Scott, because I don't get out to the track like you do. You know what I mean? And so to do this big for the first time in that space when everybody had gotten back together for the first time, you know, I'm not going to say since the pandemic ended, but gathering for the first time in, whatever, three calendar years. Oh, Cap, it was incredible.
Dude, I am so excited to hear you talk about this. So here's a question for you.
Ask me all the questions.
Now that you've been to the Kentucky Derby, you realize that Santa Anita is in your backyard and is one of the most legendary tracks in the country. And it hosts the Breeders' Cup all the time. I mean,
sure.
will you ever now go to the races? Are you now a fan?
Now, I am a fan of – okay, so here's the thing. I'm a fan of the event. The racing, okay, I'll take it. I'm not going to say I'm going to leave it. But the excitement is palpable. I appreciated that. And I don't know how this works, Scott, and you can tell me. Churchill Downs, the highest rent property in this world, as far as I understand, in the United States of America. Like, the richest of the rich. and the craziest of the crazy and the biggest of the deals happens in Louisville, Kentucky on the first Saturday in May. Now, I'm sure there might be technically nicer events and there might be better gambling and there might be better access, whatever. But this was the creme de la creme. So, like, it's going to take a little bit of a move, perhaps, if I may, a Kaplan invite to get me out. But that's not to say I would say no.
Wait. No, no. Wait until this summer. Wait till this summer. Sure. I mean, when I take you to Del Mar and you see what goes on at Del Mar, and listen, you catch the right day at Santa Anita, you have a very similar experience.
I don't disagree. I mean, I believe you. I'm just saying that I didn't know what to like and what not to like. And if that, the Churchill Downs experience, was my intro, and we can approximate anything close to that, I'm in. I don't need all that crap to go to a horse race. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot, you know, but it was fun. And if there's something more local, a little bit more accessible, a little bit more available, I'm in.
Did you happen to, because this is the question everybody's going to ask, did you put down a wager on the 80-1 long shot and eventual champion?
So I have an inside information on that. We did an around the horn investigation on this matter because when I was at the track, have you been to Churchill Downs, yes or no?
I have been to two Kentucky Derbies. You've so everything to, you're saying resonates perfectly
you've
with
been me. To two Kentucky Derbies. So here's what I learned, and this is deep gambling chalk talk, and I am not a gambler, ladies and gentlemen and kiddos in the audience. So that horse was at the post, and when it got to the post, it was the first time many human beings in the building had seen or even knew the horse was going to race. Why? Because the boards at Churchill Downs, both the physical and the digital ones, don't always scroll down.
No, they only go to 20.
18 or 19 or 20.
Right.
So this horse, somewhat scandalously, I would say, Cap, was just in many minds not on the board.
Oh, wait, Clinton, listen, I had Greg Bergman with me, who, by the way, I'll have you know, won the best dress competition at the Kentucky Derby Party.
He showed me the picture. Greg, retweet that if you're listening right now. We got to chalk talk that because your boy looked great. That's a whole other segment for the program. Go on.
Right. So we all had sheets in front of us that had horse 1 through horse 20.
Yeah.
When 21 came through and won, everybody's like, who's that?
Exactly.
It wasn't on the sheet.
It was somewhat scandalous because people were like, I was trying to bet on that horse. And in addition to that, Scott, some of the bet tellers didn't even know how to get to horse 21 on the screen because they'd never logged a bet for a horse with a number that high in a race.
Insane. Insane. And by the way, as somebody who loves baseball primarily, the comparison I've been trying to make for everybody is this 80-1 long shot. This is such a minor league horse and such a minor league jockey and trainer. And when I say minor leagues, I'm not trying to insult them. I'm saying it's the difference between, you know, single A baseball and the major leagues. Imagine a kid getting a call up from the Dodgers for game 7
and
of the World Series.
And hitting a first pitch homer. Yeah.
Right. Walk off grand slam home run in game 7, and he just came up from single A. That's what this horse, jockey, and trainer actually accomplished. So the fact that it's Wednesday afternoon and you're coming to the show with this story to start, I, for one, love it.
I knew you would love it, and I'm glad to hear that. It was quite the experience. And just overall, I'll say this quickly. This is the last thing I'll say about this in terms of the actual horse racing. That horse ran a race that was completely unreal. And for those of you out there, if you need a motivational, you know, sort of word in your life, watch the race that Rich Strike runs. Sticks with the pack for a little bit, makes one move, breaks away from two, gets through another little sticky situation and splits two horses, next thing you know, sees daylight, gone. You know what I mean? Did not need to win the race until the end and won it by, like, what, half a length, three quarters of a length? Am I right about that?
And the race caller had no idea where he was coming from.
Said his name twice in the entire
broadcast. Didn't even see him. I'm telling you. Because he kept saying, this horse on the outside, and this guy came in on the inside. He didn't even see him.
That's how you win in life, kiddos. It's not how you start. It's how you finish.
Hey, that's a good piece of advice right there, everybody, from Clinton Yates. Hey, look, he is the president of the local chapter of the Handsome Man community. He is on TV.
Correct.
And now today he's on the radio filling in for Sedona. We're just getting rolling. Coming up, yesterday the LA Times has the exclusive with Jeannie. But today the same columnist drops a bomb on national radio. Let's get to that. Clinton Yates is in studio for Sedano and Cap on 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Come on, Bunny.
Benito, by the way. We pray at the altar of Benito in my house. It's a Benito and Bercalis household when it comes to the fun parts. Bercalis is Cardi B, Scott, for those of you who don't know.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
So Clinton Yates is in today at Sedano and Cap here on 710 ESPN. You know, Clinton, based on your story that you started the show off with, there's a lot of people in the Sedano and Cap Twitter community, the Circle of Trust. Perhaps you're familiar with it?
I am. I consult it with some regularity. It is one of the deeper circles of hell in terms of, like, ridiculous theories about things that are going to happen with the Lakers. But it is a fun place to be overall.
Well, there are already people in there saying, hey, can I come to the track with you guys? Because now that you've been to the Derby and now that you want to go locally, I think there's just the same way Steve Mason takes a listener or two to a Dodger game, I'm going to put together a monster get-together of people who want to learn about the sport and take them to Santa Anita.
I love this idea. I mean, to be clear, too, I don't gamble. I placed bets at Churchill Downs. I probably wouldn't place bets at Santa Anita, but just because, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the same, nothing personal, but, like, I'm not a gambler. I literally did it because I was there and I was in the moment. But I think that could be part of it, Scott, because I had to ask an expert, like, what am I doing? Next thing you know, I'm boxing stuff. You know what I mean? Also, what is it called? Exacto, whatever.
An exacta box.
Exacta
a
box. You know what?
Right?
I'm going to pull out.
Win,
you know,
place, or show.
Did you have a superfecta ticket at all?
I got them right here. I don't have a superfecta ticket, but I had a.
You got all these losing tickets with you?
Exacta box. Yeah, I got all my losing tickets with me. That's literally exactly what's in my bag right now.
Do you save
now.
Them for your scrapbook?
You save them because when you win big at the track, You've got to offset your winnings with your losses. That's why you save them.
Yeah, so I have them here. I have one win, place, show. I have one exacta box. Am I using the right terms here?
Yeah, exacta box means the horse has to come in first and second, and it doesn't matter the order.
Is there a try something box?
Yeah, try. You can do a try box also, right?
What is it? What is the word? Okay, so it says try box. What is try, though?
Try is first, second, and third place, and they can come in any order.
So I had a try box as well. That's what I had. Yeah,
nice.
So I had,
nice.
I had a lot of stuff, yeah.
Well,
but what I'm saying is that I think you could teach people this kind of stuff.
Right.
How to gamble. Yeah.
I am telling you right now, I'm going to set it up. We're going to take a whole group of 710 listeners out to the track, have a good time, catch up with a bunch of wise guys and handicappers that can teach everybody what to do.
Sure.
And we're going to have a hell of a good time.
I'm
so Clinton Yates is in today. So Clinton, let me throw something by you here. Did you read yesterday the L.A. Times exclusive with Jeannie Buss?
Absolutely. Written by one Bill Plaschke, the man who was the reason I was at the Derby, because he's from Louisville.
I didn't realize he was from Louisville.
Yep.
So, okay. Yesterday, Jeannie has the opportunity through Bill to say everything she wants to say.
A little bit of a fireside chat kind of vibe to that story.
I felt like it was very... It was a very positive piece of public relations. That's what I'd say about it.
Okay.
And she got to defend
everybody. Wait a
minute.
You called it a fluff piece. Don't lie.
Well, but now that Clinton's here and he loves Bill Plaschke so much, I don't want to insult him, you know?
That's fair. But my love for Bill as a friend is different from my thoughts about what you're going to say next, perhaps, as a journalist. But please do go on.
Well, listen, truth be told, Lindsay, thank you for calling me out. I deserve it. I called it a fluff piece yesterday. And the reason I call it a fluff piece is because, to me, the way I analyze things like this, as a non-journalist and as a non-writer, I say, okay, she has a message. He has the column. She wants to reach the audience. He wants the exclusive. It's a win-win-win for all the parties.
Right.
She gets to put out what she wants. He gets the exclusive. The fans get to hear from her. It's a win-win-win.
Okay. So what's the issue here?
No, there is no issue. So she has a chance to say everything she needed to say yesterday, and I thought it was great. Good for her. But then today, Plaschke goes on a national radio show and drops what I think is a pretty big Laker rumor bomb. Have you read about this and heard about this?
I have, but I want to see how you're going to describe this in terms of what your actual issue is with the reporting here. I'm not saying that you're calling Bill out. I'm not implying that. I just want to know what concerns you about what he said versus what he wrote, that being Bill.
Zero concerns me.
Okay.
I'm in it for the entertainment value. I look at this stuff the same way I looked at Winning Time. Right. I don't really care about the historical relevance or what's real and what's not. I'm just watching for entertainment purposes. Same thing goes here. I read yesterday's piece as a big PR fluff piece, and that's okay. I'm not knocking it. I just know what it is. But today, Plaschke goes on a national radio show and says, and this is the quote, "I've heard that Phil would like LeBron to be traded." Now, that's a pretty big statement, don't you think?
Decent bomb. I mean, like, you know, this all depends on what you consider, and this is a totally separate discussion, which we can get into or maybe not, but it all depends on what you consider Phil's level of influence to be. Now, there's something to be said about Phil being in the fold, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? As far as all of this goes, and like, perhaps Phil's level of influence is different than a lot of other people's for obvious reasons. And so that's why this is important, is because you wonder, like, well, why are we telling the world that Phil has influence here, considering we know who Phil is, what he's done, and frankly, his relationship with the team, you know?
Right. So the quote on the radio today is, "I've heard that Phil would like LeBron traded." And then the next line is, "But I have nothing to back that up." Mm. No on-the-record stuff to back that up. I do know that Phil would like them to keep Westbrook and try to make it work with him. So, again, I don't care about the reporting. For me, it's just all entertainment. Yesterday was the fluffy, Jeannie has a bunch of stuff she wants to say. I'm going to be the conduit. I don't have an issue with that. But today it's, this is a bomb that Phil Jackson is in Jeannie's ear and he wants LeBron traded and he wants to keep Russell Westbrook and make it work with him.
Okay, first of all, Scott,
yes,
the bomb is not that Phil Jackson is in Jeannie's ear. I mean, that's nothing close to news.
No, that's we all understand that.
Very well said. We all understand that. The point here is, though, is what is it the Kamenetsky brothers do, the blame pie or the credit pie or whatever that may be? And I'm not knocking it. I just can't remember the name. Or they probably
the blame
it's
pie.
The blame pie.
It's the blame pie. But we're gonna appropriate that as the credit pie in this scenario, which is, how much credit, influence pie, rather, how much influence, Scott, do you actually think in your heart of hearts Phil Jackson has in terms of decisions the Lakers make? Because I'm not going to lie, I think it's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a ton.
I'm going to give you a number. I'm gonna put this into a percentage.
What's the number?
I would say Phil Jackson has 25% influence.
Which is a borderline majority position at that point. If you think about the Rambi, you think about Pelinka, you think about Clutch. If you divvy up all those other wedges, 25% might be, you know what I'm saying, like for one person. I don't really know how stocks and all that crap work, but he might be the singular person that has the biggest influence on this franchise. He's not named Jeannie Buss.
Phil, as Jeannie talked about in the column yesterday, she said, look, people see Phil and I around town, breakfast, lunch, dinner. She actually went out of her way to say, hey, not romantic, just so you know. I mean, we're not together again. I mean, this is all her words, not mine.
Let me ask you this. Is that weird to you a little bit? Like, well, the need to mention that as part of the whole thing? Like, and I'm not saying, listen to me, I'm not judging whether or not their romantic relationship has anything to do with the basketball. I don't even care about that. But the question is that, like, this seems like that's a weird thing to have to address at this stage, you know, Scott?
Let me ask you a question. Of your exes, you got good relationships or are you friends?
Decent. I try not to be, you know, bad about that kind of stuff. There's a couple that are on the, you know, the oxygen list, but
there's no reason to be.
But also, none of my friends or ex-girlfriends own the daggone Lakers, okay?
Unfortunately.
You know, if I had breakfast with one of them, I'm sure, never mind. Anyway, my point is that, like, this is not your normal do you talk to your exes situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just not the same. And so that aside, like, that has to play into his level of influence, and I don't even have a problem with that. Phil's probably the smartest guy in the room when it comes to that.
Right.
So
I have no issue with it either. I mean, if I were friends with Phil Jackson and I owned an NBA basketball team, my goodness, if I was coaching a JCC basketball team and I was friends with Phil Jackson, I'd ask him for his opinion.
You'd consult him?
Right. I'm like, hey, Phil, I got a team here. It's a nice little group of guys, you know, JCC league and stuff. You know, how do I run the triangle? I mean, I'd ask him.
He'd say, sit, Scotty, I'm putting Kukoc in.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm just, if I had Phil Jackson on speed dial, I would consult with Phil Jackson when it comes to basketball decisions.
I think here's my thing, too, about that. I don't disagree with you, Scott, but if I'm a person that's got Phil Jackson as the ace up my sleeve, I'm telling Phil, hey, listen, you can give me all the advice you want. I'll be taking all the credit for it. You know what I'm saying? Because the risk, but the general, maybe not chaos, there's just a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of cooks in the kitchen. You know, we've discussed this at length, ad nauseum, on this station, and that's within reason. But, like, I feel like if Phil's involved, he should be a little bit more of a shadow campaign guy. You know what I mean? Because his voice, his name, his presence is just a little too big to casually mention, oh, yeah, Phil's involved. How about that? You know what I mean? Like, he's just too much of an NBA person to sort of offhandedly say, yeah, he's got a voice in this, just like everybody else. Like, he's a big fish in a big pond. If Phil says something, I'd hope that that was taken a little bit more seriously, quite frankly, than even some people who work at the daggone team.
Well,
you know, it's tough.
Let me ask you this. So think about this for a second here. So yesterday, Plaschke has this column with Genie.
Okay.
Today, he's got this bombshell that Phil Jackson would like LeBron James to be traded and that Phil wants to keep Russell Westbrook and make it work with him. So again, if you're trying to put two and two together here, yesterday is the piece with Jeannie where she got what she wanted. Did Plaschke hear from her? Did he talk to Phil? Who's telling him? Because there's no mention of this yesterday in the column. Like, hey, I've heard just a rumor that Phil would actually like to trade LeBron. Because everything Jeannie said is, I want to make LeBron happy.
Right. It's entirely possible that he heard one thing after writing the other. Don't leave out that possibility.
Okay, yeah, that's, you know, right. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
The other thing to be remembered here is, let's not forget the history between Phil Jackson and LeBron Raymond James. It was Phil Jackson who referred to LeBron and his posse, right, if I have that correct.
That's the word.
Something that did not sit well with LeBron and Planet LeBron at the time, which, quite frankly, was kind of the early days of us kind of coming to a reckoning about, like, how we talk about athletes and how they move. It was sort of the early days of that. And a lot of people sort of looked at Phil as kind of out of touch. You know what I mean? There's an outside argument that Phil kind of lost that battle in the court of public opinion. So for him to come back, rather, for Plaschke to say that he heard that, even if it wasn't directly from Phil or whatever, it's not surprising to me. And the reason I said it is, sure, in the context of the story he wrote, Plaschke wrote yesterday, and what was said today on the radio, the juxtaposition might be jarring. But the Phil news in itself, to me, Scott, not that much of a bombshell because of the relationship we know that he has with LeBron, or rather what he said before in the past.
Yep. Oh, it would not surprise me at all if Phil Jackson is saying to Genie, the thing we need to do is we need to move on from LeBron, and I'll explain why. In fact, I'll do that after the break. Clinton Yates is in for Sedano. Let's keep this rolling. And also, coming up, the Angels had a no-hitter last night by a kid who's making, like, I mean, he's so early in his career. This guy's pitched less than 40 innings in his life. Yeah. We're going to get to the Angels situation coming up. Stick around. Yeah, it's Sedano and Cap here on 710 ESPN. It's Wednesday afternoon. Clinton Yates is in for Sedano. Hey, Clinton, what are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow, nothing.
Nothing? You got nothing going on tomorrow?
Not much. Got a couple meetings. That's about it.
Well, you know, tomorrow, Mason in Ireland, and then this show, Sedano and Cap, will be where you and I have been before. The Hollywood Park Casino for the Lombardi Party.
Okay, so I I'm glad you mentioned. Should I drop through?
Definitely. Okay. 100%. We'd love to have you.
All right, well, then I will come through.
DeMarco will be there for Sedano.
I might do the bit I did last time we had a remote, where I do last hour of Mason in Ireland, first hour of Sedano and Cap, and then I get out of there.
Dude, that would be great. We'd love to have you.
Right,
I'm inviting
you.
Please accept this. I'm the mayor of Louisville right now, inviting you to the Derby, but it happens to be the Lombardi Party.
I'm down. I like that place, too. You know what I'm saying? We were there before. Julian came out, the consigliere. Everything was great.
Good times.
You know what I'm saying? That was a good time. Absolutely, yeah.
I was going to ask you to play some card games with me after, Clint. You guys stick around for that.
Unlikely, but
come
I will
on.
Stick around.
I know you don't like to gamble, but
I'm not saying I won't stick around. I'm saying I'm not going to play any card games.
You don't have to, but you could watch me play some card games.
Okay,
that's
entertainment.
Wait, what are you going to play, Lindsay? Party craps, huh?
Yeah, it's because, you know, you can't have dice throwing games, I guess, in the state of California. You can't gamble on the outcome.
Hold on, you actually play craps?
Oh yeah, I play craps all the time when I go to Vegas.
This is a revelation, Scott.
I mean,
win lots of money on
it's,
it.
It's revelatory.
I don't know. It is. Oh, nice word, Scott. Now, okay. Buddy.
You actually used it in a way that actually made sense.
I don't know.
For 2 days, I've been trying to use this word because Sedano used it twice on Monday. And
it
I
blew
actually,
you out of the water.
I
he really
it up.
Has tried today.
When he told me it was something that was revelatory, and I messed it up later by trying to use it by calling it relevatory. And
yeah.
I've just been trying for days to find the right place to work it in.
That
and
worked.
There it is.
That
was really good. But no, the reason I ask is like craps. I don't understand craps. Like half the reason I don't gamble is because I don't understand the game.
It's hard to learn, but it took me a while. But I'm pretty good at it.
I mean, it feels like it's more complicated than baseball.
It's pretty complicated, but I mean, it's not that bad. I learned by like. 2-3 trips to Vegas, I learned.
Let's be real. What you like about craps is people looking at you at the table while you roll the dice.
No way. I actually don't like that. And usually I will gamble late into the night. I've been known to gamble late into the night wearing nothing but my pajamas.
Hey now.
You know, like slippers, hoodie, whatever. But I like craps because I tend to do really well when I play craps.
Very well. Right.
Well, I was thinking we were going to play a little blackjack tomorrow. But look, it's the Lombardi Party. It's Hollywood Park Casino. It's tomorrow afternoon. Mason in Ireland for the first 3 hours. Sedano and Cap. DeMarco will be in. Clinton's stopping by.
I will 100% be there.
Yep. And listen, then I'm planning on playing a little blackjack when we're done.
Nice.
So, hey, listen, I just want to finish this conversation with you, Clinton. Here's the thing. If Phil Jackson does have a good amount of influence with Jeannie Buss, and one of the things she said in this column yesterday was she's a collaborator. She's not a decision maker. She likes to compile data from all of her trusted sources, and then once she stirs it all up, then she makes a decision. But if Phil Jackson is in her ear, it is so conceivable to me that Phil Jackson would be saying to her, hey, Jeannie, I'm here to tell you, this is your franchise, and you have to be thinking not just about this year, but beyond this year. He's got 1 year left on a deal. He hasn't signed yet. Maybe that happens later on, but you need to start preparing for life after LeBron. And if what Bill Plaschke says is true, which he said on the radio today, I've heard that Phil would like to trade LeBron. I actually believe that.
Here's the thing. And this is going to sound crazier than a lot of people think. I'm not sure how many teams would trade for LeBron James. I'm being quite honest about that. In terms of where he is in his career, we've talked all season for 2-3 seasons, Scott, about Planet LeBron. And I'm not knocking their operation. I'm just saying, like, the last team that might have been able to withstand the, not the blow, but the merger and still be successful was probably the Lakers. I mean, think about it. Like, the conceptual notion of the Lakers trading LeBron is one thing. But how many teams are really going to give up everything they've got effectively, which is what you'd be trading LeBron for a guy who's got probably max 3 more years in the league? You know what I'm saying, Scott? I don't know that trade is as viable as people seem to think it is to get back what it is you would need to get back to completely refuel that is of a higher value than LeBron right now, who's the best player on the team.
Yeah, I think
That's the hard part.
Well, the other part of what I think I hear you saying is, you know, how many teams are willing to give up, I'm putting this in quotes, everybody, so don't freak out, but give up control of their team. And when I say control, I don't mean like all of a sudden he's going to come to your team and redo your roster, but when he walks through the locker room, that becomes his team.
Right. Which is fair. You know, he's earned that right as a player, but that's kind of my point is that the Lakers are probably the one franchise that at the point in LeBron's career that he was at, never mind is at, could harness that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was something that was possibly able to work with the franchise without being, you know, sort of the takeover or control, as you the word you used, you know, good or bad. They're probably the one franchise that could do that. And, you know, we can get into arguments about whether or not it worked out and this, that, and the third, and the ring, bubble rings, and all this kind of other nonsense. But, like, the bottom line is that I'm not sure that any franchise is willing to just let him come through the door, even if the Lakers decide they want to get rid of him, which in my opinion would be stupid. He's the best player on the team.
All right, we can get deeper into this as the afternoon goes on. But Clinton, let me ask you this. Did you see what happened last night with the Angels?
Of course.
Because here's a point I want to make. I understand that the Angels will never be able to be the Dodgers, just the same way the Clippers will never be able to be the Lakers. I got it. But can we at least agree on one thing? The Angels are making enough noise to have people who normally don't pay attention to them start paying attention to them.
I totally agree, and I think that the verbiage you used is exactly correct. They are making enough noise. Now, people always in the baseball world, and I talk about this a lot on TV and in various other places, people always want to do that stupid bit where they connect, well, Mike Trout's the best player in the league. He's the best player ever. He's the best, greatest player right now. They should be great. No, that's not how it works in baseball, flatly. Now, that being said, they've also got my man Otani, who is the most exciting player in baseball. Never at me about that. But the point is this. Let's not forget, the Halos went through in the last, what, four seasons, Scott? One of the more horrific tragedies in Major League Baseball history. Not just Angels history, not just SoCal baseball history, not just West Coast baseball history. In Major League Baseball history, when a player of theirs passed away. In a very controversial situation, if for no other reason, then we can talk about actual baseball and we can have good stories from a guy who goes a complete game. He's a rookie. He got called up in August last year. It's not his first year in the bigs, but he's still a rookie based on games played. Goes a complete game, Scott. And mind you, I said this on television today. You know what my favorite stat about that outing was, Scott?
Tell me.
He only struck out two batters.
Isn't that amazing?
He threw a no-no and struck out two dudes. Which means his fielders were behind him, which means he was getting it going, and from a work rate standpoint, probably keeping it moving pretty quickly in terms of what, you know, his fielders like. And it worked out. He got a little bit of a, you know, got a little bit of a favor with the error hit call. But like, to me, I'm just happy that Halos fans have sort of an entirety of a product to root for and are not still thinking about the legacy of what had gone wrong over the last couple seasons.
I just love the story, and I'm paying more attention to the Angels than ever before.
They're hot.
First because of Ohtani, then because Trout has returned. All of a sudden, a guy like Noah Syndergaard, who's a big personality, shows up. They've got over 20 wins already. They're in first place. I even love the story about the guy who was catching last night, Chad Wallach. And by the way, almost 40,000 people in Angel Stadium last night. But Chad Wallach is a guy who's from here in Southern California, from Yorba Linda. His dad once played for the Dodgers. And this guy had a chance to catch this no-hitter last night. But now my favorite part. Noah Syndergaard going on to Twitter.
Dropping bombs.
Oh, dude. How see, this is great.
This is great on him.
This is what I mean. When I say making noise, you got a player like Syndergaard who has no fear that he's going to go scream at the Mets, essentially, on social media because they said that he was taking a shot at their no-hitter that was a combined no-hitter versus a one-man no-hitter. I love this Noah Syndergaard
stuff. Read the quote.
I'm finding it.
I'll give you a quick update. I'll give you a quick update on Wallach. The better, not the better part of the story, but not only did he pop up Southern California, he hit a bomb that game. And by the way, he got called up to the 40-man roster last week. It's not like this dude is in the bigs forever. It's amazing.
God, I can't believe I lost this. That was so anticlimactic, you know? I had it, and I lost it.
Alas, you know, all you got to do is Twitter search, bro. I'll read it. Quote from Noah Syndergaard. Hate to break to you, but this song ain't about you. Great quote, by the way. Who's that song by? That's your era.
Carly Simon, right?
Sure.
You're so vain.
Exactly.
You're so vain. You probably think this song is about
you. Who remade that
song?
Somebody remade that song.
You're so vain.
Somebody remade that song. It's not Janet Jackson, but somebody in that territory.
You probably think this song is about you, don't you?
I bet you think this song is. Anyway, so, okay, quote from Noah Syndergaard 4 hours ago on Twitter. Hate to break it to you, but this song ain't about you. This was about Reed, a great teammate, throwing a one-pitcher no-hitter, which is a rarity by today's game standards. Mets have a good team. Reminder, Mets are his former team. Mets have a good team. Enjoy that instead of stirring S. As do the Angels, so drop the drama and move on.
Loved it.
Mic drop.
Loved it.
Love it.
Hey, Angels, you're making enough noise that we're all starting to pay attention. Great job, Angels. Seriously, I mean, I can't believe the Dodgers just lost 2 out of 3 in Pittsburgh. Unbelievable. Stick around. What we all need to know is coming up next. Laura will drop that on us. Clinton Yates is in for Sedano. And the NFL schedule will be fully released tomorrow during the Lombardi party. But there's already starting to have some leaks here. So we can find out what the Rams have coming up. We'll get to that next. This is Sedano and Cap on 710 ESPN.